Welcome back. I'm Pierre Daly, Managing Director at AdvisorAnalyst.com, and this is Insight is Capital. Today, we're joined by someone who has quite literally chronicled the rise of an entire industry. Deborah Furr, the founder and managing partner of ETFGI, is here. If you've ever looked up data on ETFs anywhere in the world, chances are her fingerprints are on it. Deborah is one of the most recognized authorities in global ETF research and a relentless advocate for education and transparency in the space. She's here ahead of the 7th annual ETFGI Global ETFs Insights Summit in Toronto on December 9th, where thought leaders, issuers, regulators, and innovators will gather to dissect what's next for Canada's ETF ecosystem, from active strategies and tokenization to demographics and the future of investor behavior. We'll also dive into ETFGI's latest findings, including the fact that global ETF assets just hit a record $18.8 trillion, a milestone that tells us a lot about where investors are putting their trust and what that means heading into 2026.
This is Insight is Capital. Join us in our fireside chats with some of the most fascinating people in finance to discuss their insights on life, markets, macro, investment strategy, and much more.
Deborah, it's such a pleasure to have you back. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here. And thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Deborah, well deserved. And thank you again for being here. Deborah, it's been quite a year, hasn't it? I mean, full of surprises, right? What's been your take?
Yeah, so I guess the one thing I would take away from this, as has been the case many times in the past, and I've been doing research on the ETF industry since 1998. So when we see volatility or unexpected things happening in the market, the silver lining is often that ETFs perform well and people use them more and in greater ways. So when we look at this year, we've now, at the end of September, had 76 months of consecutive net inflows. You've mentioned we've reached records in terms of where the assets are. But what we really see are the users of ETFs and the geography of those users has really expanded quite significantly. And I think one of the things I've said since I started is ETFs are unique in that they're the only democratic investment product. So you see sovereign wealth funds, hedge funds, asset managers using them. You see financial advisors, and then you also see direct retail. And everyone has access to the exact same products, the same annual cost. And that's really unique when you think about financial products. And when I think about where we're going in terms of investing, I think three really important drivers going forward are going to be retail, retirement, and also because of the large transfer of wealth, women investors become more important. And so we're seeing that, you know, retail investors are going to digital platforms. And so a lot of them are finding ETFs on their own and using them in very significant ways. We also see that financial advisors are increasingly turning to ETFs because the job of serving the male and female or partners in a relationship and the children and doing all the tax work is becoming more important. And then with this transfer of wealth, women live longer than men. And often they decide if they get divorced or the husband passes away, they go and find a new advisor. So I think, you know, there's a lot of opportunities and need for education. And then we just look at the footprint of ETFs. Today, we have ETFs on 81 exchanges in 63 countries. There's many countries that don't have ETFs that are working on launching them or finding ways to cross-list existing products. So it's in a really still an exciting place for me. I've been doing this since 98, but it's interesting. There's always new things happening and the people in the industry and the investors are a lot of fun to work with.
Yeah, it's remarkable. You know, one of the things I like doing is looking at either mutual funds or ETFs and looking at their ingredients, their portfolios. And I'm increasingly, you know, on an increasing basis, and to your point, like what I've noticed is that a lot of ETFs and mutual funds are investing in other ETFs as proxies for positions they'd like to hold in their portfolios. So it's really interesting to see the universal use or the democratization, but across all strata of the financial market using universally the same products as right down to the retail investor.
Exactly.
It's interesting. It must be really interesting to be able to show, you know, like for an advisor to show a client, look, I mean, even, you know, this portfolio has ETFs in it and we have access to the same ETFs.
Exactly. And I think it's because you can use ETFs in so many different ways. So a mutual fund might decide to use it as a liquidity sleeve. So rather than sitting in cash, you can hold an ETF. And if you need to raise cash, you can very easily during the day sell the ETF at any time. So I think rather than in a rising market, as we've seen this year, you know, sitting in cash means you're going to have cash drag. Well, if you're sitting in something that is similar to the exposure you want or part of that overall portfolio, then you're going up with the market, assuming that part of the market's going up. So I think we've seen people using ETFs as core holdings, as satellites, as tactical plays.
Mm-hmm.
Or increasingly, you know, if you want to invest in emerging markets, it can be difficult to invest directly. You need foreign investor status or dealing with different currencies. Buying an ETF that's listed and traded locally means it's very easy to get that exposure. So I think, you know, all of these are reasons that we just see the increasing use of ETFs.
Deborah, I want to talk to you about your upcoming conference first. You've got the event in Toronto coming up at the Borden Ladner offices on December 9th.
Correct.
And Deborah, what is the big story or vision behind this year's Toronto ETF GI Global ETFs Insights Summit? What makes this one stand out from the past six?
Well, I guess one bit is this is the 35th anniversary of the listing of the first ETFs in Canada. So Canada deserves big credit for that. That actually happened on March 9th, so earlier in the year. But I think it's to recognize that and also just to continue to look at the growth and innovation in Canada. There's been many other things that were first in Canada, fixed income, leverage and inverse, you know, trying advisor share classes. But I think what we look at also is the regulator decided to do a consultation on ETFs. And so we'll be looking to get a further update from them in terms of where might this consultation be going in terms of potential changes. So I think that would be one bit that we'll look at. But in general, it's looking at, as you point out, for Canadians, buying locally domiciled products is better than buying US ETFs from a tax perspective. So I think all things being equal, if you can find both types, buying the Canadian version is better. I think we also see that the growth of digital assets and crypto has started to move into model portfolios. So I think that is a big shift from where we were even a few years ago, where Canada had physically backed crypto products before the US, so another first.
Right.
But we really weren't seeing the firms that launched these products, including them in their models. And now we're starting to see that. So I think there's a lot of shifts in terms of how people think about investing, asset allocations, the different ways they might be thinking about, whether it's saving for retirement or putting their children through university or saving for a holiday, and how you might think about using different types of products in each of those buckets. I think the other trend that I see that's important, that is really a global trend, is important drivers going forward. If you look at who uses ETFs, is younger investors. And they're not going to advisors. So they're using digital platforms and they're liking ETFs because they're transparent, easy to use, small investment size, can buy them whenever they want to, don't have to fill out paperwork. I think the other one would be retirement. So we're seeing that increasingly regulators around the world have found that many people thought their government would take care of them when they retire. So rather than investing, we see many people have been putting their savings into cash or bank accounts. And so there is a general trend to talk to retail investors about the importance of investing as opposed to just going into bank accounts. The other thing that we've seen is in general, younger men and men tend to feel more comfortable investing, and women in general have not. And when we think about that transfer of wealth that, depending on who you talk to, could be $124 trillion moving, because women tend to live longer than men, And often if they get divorced or because the husband passes away, they end up changing financial advisors, often because the advisor really hasn't built that relationship with them. And you also find that the children tend to move away. So I think these are going to be part of the discussion we have in terms of how will these trends impact who's using ETFs, how are they using them, and how should they use them? And also, how do you select ETFs, right? You often have a large shelf of products to select from. And so, you know, talking about what things are important when you think about selecting ETF and what types of products are on the horizon to be coming forward. I think one of the nice things today is you as a retail investor or as an advisor can actually have portfolios built by the largest asset managers and not have to pay them a lot of money. Whereas before, they would only be building portfolios for sovereign wealth funds and they'd be paying them a lot of money. So I think the access to professionally built tools like ETFs and professionally built portfolios that use them is really important. And I think you have some of the most innovative robo-advisors and tools up in Canada too. So it'll be touching on all of these topics and then including investors who are using ETFs to talk about their experience and what are some best practices they might be willing to share with people in the audience?
Well, it sounds like, I mean, it sounds amazing. I have to say, like, the whole subject matter of, you know, women succeeding the family assets is one that I think most advisors would be deeply interested in right off the bat. I mean, of course, the rest of the topical matter, the rest of the subject matter that you're covering in your conference is highly relevant as well. But just thinking of the threat that advisors face to their business from succession, that is probably something that is going to be front of mind over the next decade, right? I mean, that's something that's potentially a rude awakening for many advisors to deal with. So you've brought together a fascinating mix of speakers from regulators to innovators in active and thematic ETFs. What kind of conversations or debates do you expect will really define this year's summit?
Yeah, so, and I guess maybe just to go back a little bit. So you could see this as an advisor as a threat, but I think given that we're discussing this early on and every day, you know, there's probably 10,000 people turning 65 or whatever age. So there's still an opportunity to change your behavior, develop relationships, both with the spouse or with the children. So I think, you know, hopefully this just stimulates thoughts and people to broaden their relationship and expand their client base and what they might be doing for them. In terms of, you know, discussions, what I do think is happening is that a lot of the active ETFs that are coming to market are more systematic active. So how do people think about these products? Where do they fit into a portfolio? How are they going to be evolving going forward? Because I think many people have been skeptical about why would I use an active ETF versus using an active mutual fund? How do I go about selecting them? Are they really liquid? So I think, you know, in general, these events want to be educational, but I think what we often end up doing is busting a lot of myths that people think, oh, this wouldn't work or it's not going to work. I think we've seen, you know, that being something that's been discussed about ETFs forever. I mean, during COVID, many of the regulators thought that fixed income ETFs wouldn't work. The reality was they actually worked better than mutual funds because of the way they trade and settle. We found that if people wanted to trade them, the authorized participants or designated brokers, as you call them, would go out and price the underlying bonds, which didn't happen with mutual funds. So they were actually a very good price discovery vehicle. And we saw that investors that held significant portfolio bonds, in some cases, actually transitioned them into ETFs. So I think, you know, how people are using ETFs continues to evolve. I think we're also seeing that the use of digital and online brokerage tools is becoming important. I think the other area is what role can and should AI take in various parts of the asset management industry. I think that's an interesting conversation. And then what role could potentially tokenization play or using blockchain? So not just talking about digital assets or cryptocurrencies, but many people are talking about tokenizing real world assets and providing access on blockchain. We also see that people have tokenized access to private equity, mutual funds. So I think there's a lot of interesting things that are starting to evolve. And so starting that conversation and debating where it might be going in the future. I think another thing that we will have is actually a fireside chat with Lindsay Patrick, who is one of the people who's been involved with Women ETFs. And I'm one of the founders of that organization. We now have 13,000 members in 32 chapters around the world, 20% are men. Lindsay is going to do a fireside chat on her career. And she's a very interesting person, done really well. She even though took a number of years off to spend time with her family and, you know, allow her young children to have her at home for a while. So often that's seen as something kind of taboo that you can't do and have a successful career. So I think it'll be interesting to talk about that with her and to encourage that kind of dialogue of seeing role models that women can look up to, but also to allow men to feel comfortable that women can take some time off and come back and still have a successful career.
The opportunities for women in finance, in the advisory business or any part of it is remarkable. I mean, it's a field that has been sort of under recognized, as being very well fitted to women being in the business. And, you know, I've had conversations with, I mean, one recent conversation comes to mind with Rick Edelman from, DAC FP, former, you know, Rick Edelman of Edelman RIA. You know, he actually went out of his way to say that, you know, some of the best financial advisors he's ever known within the organization he founded were women. They're often much better than their male counterparts at the work because they're more empathetic. They have a very high emotional quotient. And you know, that works very well in the business of managing people and, you know, the human aspect of managing money. I think if women realize that this was a world, if more women realize, and I know you do through Women in ETFs, you do a substantial outreach program through universities and colleges. If more women took up the mantle to become advisors or to get into the wealth management business, or into the ETF business specifically, in the case of women in ETFs, I think they'll discover a world that's fascinating, equally fascinating to them as it has been to, you know, to date, to all those who are already in the business. I don't think there's another business like it. It's you know, it's one of the most exciting places in the world of business to be and to see. To see more and more women becoming interested in it is wonderful.
Yeah,
and your work obviously is playing a very big role in that. I think that'll be a really interesting conversation.
Yeah, and we're lucky with Women ETFs. There's an army of volunteers that have helped to make it what it is today. We're just turning 12 years old, so to have 13,000 members, and Canada has a very big chapter, and many people know Tammy and Tanya, who were the co-heads of that chapter for many years. But we have people across the ETF ecosystem that are now helping to organize events, university outreach. We do mentorship programs. And the idea is really to connect, support, inspire women, diversity, and inclusion in the industry. You know, talking about the role that women can play, I also think women think about investing differently in that they tend to, we often say, like, when there's a lot of volatility, you should stay calm and carry on. That's kind of a British saying. And women tend to do that, where men often feel like they should do something and react. And so you tend to find that it's hard to market time, right? So if you can stay calm and carry on over time, you tend to find that the performance of the portfolio often benefits from that. And I also think that if you look at companies where there are senior management or CEOs that are women, women getting into those roles tend to have done a much better job than an equivalent male. And so you find that those companies actually tend to perform better. So I think there are a number of economic variables that you can see that are beneficial when companies are diverse at various levels, right? And I also think board plays an important role in that. So I think there's a number of things where it's not just a nice to do. There is actually performance and economic benefits to some of these initiatives.
Amazing. If you had to guess, Deborah, what do you think will be the surprise topic of the conference? What do you think will be the big takeaway everyone will be talking about afterwards? Just your best guess.
Well, maybe it's something about the feedback that the regulator has gotten or has taken away from the consultation, right? So I think that'll be quite interesting because it's timely, that's ongoing. So I think that could be one that would be, I think, potentially quite interesting to hear what they have to say.
Yeah, there's a lot happening on the regulatory front in Canada, in the next year, with lots of changes coming. And of course, CRM3 total cost reporting is also coming. In your latest report, you've shown that global ETF assets hit a record $18.81 trillion. What do you think is really driving that momentum? Has it been market performance, product innovation, or a deeper structural shift in investor behavior?
Probably a little bit of all of that. I think one of the things, as you pointed out earlier, is the U.S., although Canada was first, U.S. was a few years later, it is the biggest pool of assets. And so in the ETF industry, it's like 70% of the assets. One of the big things we've seen there is that ETFs are more tax efficient than mutual funds. And so we've seen advisors and retail investors and even institutional investors talking to manufacturers of mutual funds saying, please convert this into an ETF. Or what we've also seen is a number of the firms have filed with the SEC to do either ETFs with mutual fund share classes or mutual funds with ETF share classes. Up until 2023, Vanguard had a patent on that process of doing mutual funds with ETF share classes. So no one explored this. We've seen recently that the SEC has given the go-ahead basically to Dimensional Fund Advisor. There's 80 other firms that are looking to do this. So we expect that we'll see new products coming to market, which will be mutual funds with ETF share classes. But we have, over the past few years, seen firms converting mutual funds into ETFs. So it's bringing assets in sizable portion. We've also seen hedge funds convert. We've seen private funds convert. We've seen SMAs convert. So I think the end investor has been talking a lot to asset managers there, which has continued to drive the assets. We've also seen, though, that, as I mentioned earlier, retail is important. We've also seen that active ETFs have become very important as we see new entrants coming in who say, I didn't want to compete with the top three firms in the index space, so they're doing active ETFs. And it is interesting because the first active ETF in the U.S. was issued in 2008 by Bear Stearns, and the ticker was YYY. And the resounding comment from everyone was, why do we need active ETFs?
Yeah.
Clearly, the thought around this has changed a lot, and we're seeing active ETFs being used around the world. So I think that's a driver, would be active ETFs. I think product innovation. So, if you think about it, it was in the early days index. I think it's moved to active. But I think the other place we see ETFs moving is to structured product-like outcomes. And if you look at some of the senior management at the asset managers in Canada, a lot of them actually have come from structured product backgrounds. So I think, it's like providing, using options inside of ETFs, it's target date, it's buffered products. So I think that that's quite interesting for many investors. And I think we're seeing more innovation there. I think we also saw when the first Bitcoin products came to market in the U.S., which was an interesting phenomenon, right? Because it really ended up happening because of a court case against the SEC. But then we had 11 firms come to market at the same time. I would say that BlackRock getting behind Bitcoin and crypto was really an important moving point for people thinking about it differently. And so if you look, their product now has like $100 billion in assets. It's the largest revenue generating product in the U.S. for them. But we also see that these products, crypto, are being used in model portfolios. So I would say digital assets and crypto would be another important driver. I think retail adoption And also, I think people are trying to fit alternative strategies into ETFs. So, you know, people are trying to do private equity, CLOs and other types of strategies and ETFs. It may not be the right wrapper, but I do think it just shows how people are looking and embracing the ETF wrapper. And basically, what can go in an ETF is the same as what can go into a 40 Act fund or a Canadian mutual fund, right? The rules are the same. And then I think, you know, they're growing in terms of geography. So if you look at where ETFs are available today, we continue to see new countries embracing them. But we also see that existing products, even from Canada, are traveling around the world. And so people right. find something they want and they're buying products from everywhere because it's like a stock for many people. They find it on an exchange or online broker and they buy them. So I think there's a lot of growth dynamics and tailwinds pushing and probably regulations. We see regulators saying ETFs are really good tools for retirement investing. So, you know, one of the things we did, and I'm just trying to find my chart here, we looked at where the global ETF industry might be by 2030. And I created kind of four scenarios. So I have my like bear case to bull case, so aggressive. Right. And if you assume between now and 2030, a 10% compound annual growth rate globally, we go from 18 trillion to 27 trillion. If you do 15%, we end up at 34 trillion. If you do 20, which is where the ETF industry has been averaging, we'd end up at 42. And if you go aggressive and say, well, we see conversions and share classes and whatever, if we get to 25% compound annual growth, we'd be at $52 trillion in the ETF industry globally by 2030, which is really impressive.
That's incredible. That is impressive. I think the shift from mutual funds issuing ETF share classes is exciting. You know, but overall, just looking at the global, never mind, you know, and of course, looking inwardly at Canada, I really feel like, you know, as a former advisor, I really feel like there's never been a more exciting time to be an advisor. There are so many, I mean, there's a problem, obviously, with the proliferation because there's such a learning curve that you have to go through in order to learn about all the new, you know, investment vehicles that are being wrapped in ETFs. But at the same time, I mean, I wish that the problems that could be solved today with today's toolbox of, you know, with today's ETF toolbox, I wish it had been available when I was an advisor. I wish I would have had access to that ability to manage, like, to manage my clients' portfolios with that efficiency and low cost. I mean, it would have probably been an entirely different business to be able to do that. I'm sometimes envious of the advisors who are in the space, who are getting the access to these solutions and being able to build portfolios that actually, you know, are resilient and provide, you know, investors with the right outcomes and the right, you know, sort of emotional tolerance for that client. It's possible to build, you know, almost anything, any kind of portfolio with today's tools. And then looking forward at what's coming, you know, you mentioned, I remarked on it earlier this year that a lot of the people that have joined some of the big ETF issuers in Canada are from the structured product space. And I thought that was remarkable because, you know, those are the people who have historically structured, you know, fund products, structured notes, you know, anything with a structured outcome. And to be able to package that in an ETF wrapper is astonishing. Like to be able to provide investors with that kind of accessibility, that kind of, you know, simplified access. The other thing is like the barriers to entry are dropping, you know, which is obviously that's the democratization. But for the retail investor to also have the same access to all the information and the willingness to do the research, the sky's the limit. There's no, you know, there's nothing you can't do. Is there anything any patterns that you see emerging in terms of how advisors or institutions are rethinking diversification?
Well, I do think that it used to be, many would say, I'll never use ETFs because I need to be picking stocks or bonds to add value for my clients. So I do think there's been a significant mind shift towards ETFs being a solution or tool that can be used efficiently and makes sense to be used. So I think that that's a significant change that we've seen. I think also the fact that, we've seen a significant growth in these model portfolios that use ETFs and mutual funds as building blocks to deliver, you know, in some cases, target date outcomes, in some cases, risk profiled outcomes. So I think, you know, we see how you can get institutional grade investment advice packaged up in a very easy fashion for advisors or retail to get access to. But I think in general, you know, still we're seeing that the majority of flows this year are going into risk on investing. So the most of the money's gone into equities, although we have seen a lot of people having mixed views. So some people are putting a lot of money into gold this year. Some people are putting money into short-term treasury. So I think in general, people have different views on where the market's going and whether they feel, you know, we're kind of at a peak now and they want to move back. I think in general, many people are still sitting on a lot of cash. So I think if they felt more comfortable, they probably would put more money into the market. So, but it's been an interesting year, as we were chatting in the beginning, right? You know, there's been a lot of political and economic uncertainty. You know, what's going on in the Middle East, what's going on in Russia and Ukraine, you know, discussions about China and trade wars. So I do think that causes some people to take a little bit of pause and think maybe I shouldn't be quite as risk on and sitting just to wait and see what happens. But in general, I think, you know, what we do see is the flows are positive into risk on assets overall. And the net flows this year are already at a record level. So we're likely to see full year over $2 trillion of net new inflows. I mean, there's no other product out there that has had 76 months of consecutive net inflows. So I think in general, you know, the ETF wrapper has gone from something that, you know, if I go back to 1998, when I started writing research, there were 21 ETFs and $8 billion. And I would call people and ask them if they wanted to have a meeting to learn about ETFs. Would explain briefly what they're on the phone, and they're like, I'm an active manager, you know, don't come see me and hang up, or ask me if I'm going to pay them rebates. If not, go away. So I do think, you know, the story has really evolved a lot since I first started, but it continues to evolve. I mean, there's still very important opportunities, and ETFs are fitting into different buckets of investing. And I think the biggest opportunity probably for everyone is to find a way to make it as easy for people to open accounts for babies when they're born. So to give everyone a certificate and say, here's how you open an account, and people give them, you know, an ETF share along with the teddy bear.
You know, I can't help thinking that, you know, for a lot of advisors, for a lot of investors, there's these aha moments where it's like, you know, wow, I didn't know I could do that. You know, I didn't know that was possible. And I think that's really one of the things that has made, you know, the ETF space remarkable is that it is that simplification that you just mentioned, which is that it's become a lot easier to be diversified. First of all, it's become a lot easier to invest in just about anything. Looking ahead, Where do you see the next wave of ETF growth coming from, whether that's geography, asset class, or type of investor?
Well, I do think retail will continue to be important. I think advisors are. I do, though, think that tokenization probably is something we should watch in terms of how might people be wrapping ETFs and tokenizing them. In many markets, you know, the brokerage cost is very high. And so if there was a way to tokenize exposure to ETFs and allow people to deposit their paycheck into a wallet, you have model portfolios, you have a money market account. When you go shopping, you just tap your phone or your wallet and there you go. And you've bought whatever it is you need to buy. I think that presents some interesting opportunities. But I think in general, it's... there's still a lot of people who've never tried ETFs. So it's impressive to me how many people will come to events and until they try, they don't really know. They're afraid, do I need to create? Do I need to redeem? How do I do this? Who do I talk to? And so what you tend to find is we still have people sitting there that come to events but haven't yet done it. And once they try, they tend to use ETFs more in greater sizes in more ways. So I do think that there is a large number of people who haven't yet dipped their toes in. It's kind of like, you know, I don't know, when you're growing up and your mom says, try lima beans or something. And maybe lima beans is not the greatest idea because I don't really like them. But certain things tell you to try and you try them and it actually wasn't so bad. Or you haven't gone out and had sushi and you're not really sure like what all the names are and should I try it? You try it and you really like it. So I think it's, you know, give it a go. And I do think that I haven't met anyone who said they were really disappointed after trying ETFs, especially if they try plain vanilla. I think you need to know what you're buying and why. But I think if you give it a go, it's worth, I think, looking at using it. And especially when you think about, you know, easy access to markets, you can decide you want access. And if it's a market where it's hard to consistently deliver alpha, if you still believe in the index story, you know, if you look at the SPIVA study where they say typically 7 out of 10 active managers don't beat the S&P 500, you can buy an ETF for, you know, less than 10 basis points. It's kind of an easy thing to do. You get the exposure to the US and then you can generate alpha through getting your asset allocation right. So alpha isn't just about active funds. Although if you have active funds you like, you should, you know, use them. But I think it's about opening up your mind to how might you be able to generate alpha and build portfolios. And as you point out, the array of ETFs that are out there today in Canada, not having to go outside the borders, is quite large. And those are very tax efficient for Canadian investors.
So, Deborah, your conference is coming up. It's December 9th in Toronto. It's a full day. It's at Borden Ladner Gervais' office, downtown Toronto. It's free for advisors to attend?
Correct. Yes.
Right?
And I do understand and there's actually an underground walkway. I remember one year, the first year we held it in that office, people complained because there was snow on the ground and they had to walk outside through the snow. So my understanding is you can get there now underground if there is snow.
Right. Well, December is kind of early for snow. Well, it's hit or miss. But so we're going to put the details of the conference are below in the show notes, and you can register for ETFGI's Toronto Summit by clicking on the link.
And advisors can also get educational credits. So if they want CPD credits, if they attend and fill out the evaluation form, they'll get credit for attending.
Perfect. And it's the end of cycle 10 in Canada. So this is a great opportunity to round out your CE requirements. Deborah, thank you again for your incredibly valuable time and insight. It's been so great to catch up with you again and all that you're doing.
Well, thank you very much. And I look forward to seeing you and everyone in Canada quite soon.